Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining us on the line, Luba Mayakisa. Luba, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Howard.
So you are starting with an important update around your daughter.
It's 3 times a week. So last week she said to me, this is not working for her. She wants to go to school every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Even on the non-school days, apparently they can sit in their library and work from there. I said, sure. I said, no, that's what I want to do. So now she's going to school every day of the week, and COVID-19 seems to have been banished from her mind. The fact that her birthday is around the corner might also be contributing, because she wants to have a little party with her friends, just trying to figure out.
Birthday. Right. Okay. So, you know what? Parenting continues to be a challenge, as it is for all of us. Luba, what's also a challenge is running a country, no doubt, and trying to get things right. We were talking earlier to Howard Saxton about the corruption within the ANC, this letter that Cyril Ramaphosa wrote. What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I only read the letter for the first time yesterday, but I've heard various comments. It's a strange one in many regards, because it kind of says the right things, but there's nothing really new in it, in the sense that, you know, he details corruption, you know, everything from state capture, what's happening, the Zondo Commission, in the parastatals, and through COVID-19. But that's, we already know that. So it doesn't really, in some ways, tell us anything new. And most of the remedial action that needs to be done are things that people have been saying all along, you know. So I've looked at what, you know, the organization needs to do and what government needs to do. There are some areas where I'm a bit lost in terms of how they want to deal with procurement, you know, making it public and using AI. There isn't a lot of detail that's been given. So I would say it's good to hear the president saying these things and writing the letter, but to be brutally honest, he hasn't really said anything new. And the question is, can you follow through on these issues, the integrity commission, the lifestyle audits? Can you really get to the bottom and do those things? And I think for me, that is a challenge, whether or not you can actually follow through. Because remember, a lot of the stuff that he points to is an ASRAC conference. And then the question is, okay, fine, that was almost 2 years ago. Why are you pointing to it now? So over the last 2 years, you know, he says some strides have been made, but it's been painfully slow, you know, since he's come into power. When the former president Zuma stepped down, you look at how slowly the wheels have been grinding around the Zondo Commission. You've got the Gupta issues around Eskom. So there have been some very clear issues that aren't as complicated as the COVID, where you've got maybe 1,000 companies bidding, where you've got one or two individuals implicated in PRASA or implicated in Eskom. But it's been painfully slow just to even get those moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be optimistic, but there is some kind of skepticism in terms of how will this play out. And of course, there is a challenge that he is writing this letter, and you know, I'm assuming that it's consulted with the other guys in the, you know, in the top six structure, which includes him. And how will that pan out? Has it got the support? I know Derek Hanekom came out saying that, you know, those members who are honest support this letter. And the question is, can you really give this letter, can you give it teeth? Because there's nothing new in the letter. It's merely saying that we should build adequate capacity in the justice system, in the prosecuting authorities.
Yeah.
And things that the ANC needs to do. Now, the question is, will it do those things? And I think that's the question. And I think it's not, you know, the challenge, I think, with corruption. Corruption may start maybe at a political level. It then starts to filter down to an ordinary, you know, person in a departmental office, which is much harder to target. It's easier to go for high profile people and say, don't get involved in business. But what do you do when you've got, let's say, somebody holding an ordinary clerical position within supply chain management or within a department who then, you know, allows a relative or something like that? That's much harder, because what you're dealing with is putting structures in place, but also dealing with a mindset of people. And that's a much harder thing to deal with, because it almost takes time for corruption to spread through, you know, a system, whether government or private sector. And once it does and takes root, pieces of, you know, legislation or laws or policies don't uproot it because it's endemic. It's how people then get used to doing business.
Yes. You know? Right.
I think, but I shared.
You're sorry, come on.
I shared with you a while ago that I won't mention the bank. There was a bank that I worked for in the early 90s. And what they had was people in head office who would just simply say, listen, I'm waiting for a petrol claim or some claims for 5,000 rand. I'm not going to wait for them. So please put money into my account, 5,000 rand, and put an IOU. And head office management did this for a while. And eventually when I got to a small branch in Umtata, the teller reckoned, you know what, if I'm short of money, if the guy in head office can do this, I will do the same. So the system literally filtered through the entire bank. And by the time the new owner had removed all the top managers, this is what the tellers were doing. I would walk into a branch and I would close the teller and do a surprise cash count. And I would count in physical notes, maybe 5 grand. And then when I tried to balance in the system said this person should have 220,000. I would say, but where's the money? And they'd pull out pieces of paper and they would say, here's the rest. You know, I've paid X amount to that person's account. And there was a problem is that junior staff had learned that it's okay to be fraudulent, to help yourself to money because the top guys are doing it. It took them a while. And once they got into it, it was much more difficult to do. And when I confronted people, they would look at me and they would say, but what have I done wrong? And you could see a person with tears in eyes who literally did not comprehend what your problem was because this is how business was done. This is how people conducted things. And so I was viewed as this horrible monster and you'd have somebody sitting there in tears and say, I don't understand. Why are you chasing me?
Yeah, tell me what I did wrong. It's really such a frightening thing. What do you think about the part in the letter where he says, well, corruption didn't start here. It started, under apartheid. I mean, there's no doubt that apartheid in of itself was a corrupt system. But we know that. How do you possibly blame, theft in 2020 something that happened more than 26 years ago? And what is your response to that?
I understand what you're saying, that you can't blame theft there. I read it differently, Howard. For instance, on social media this weekend, I had some of my friends who come from the old Transguy and Cisguy who were saying that under the homeland systems, things were very efficient, schools and all of these issues. And I had to step in and say, no, nonsense. The homelands were as corrupt as they could get. So for me, I didn't read that as an excuse or saying we didn't start corruption or don't blame us, we're simply continuing. But it's a reality check of saying this problem has been with us for quite a while. And I do find often, you know, in the black community, people tend to say the homelands were very efficient. The homeland rulers were very good. But I know, for instance, that in the homeland system, it was clan-based. So if you, Howard, were, let's say, in a Jewish context, that it was based on the tribes, that if you were a Cohen or something, then you were made. So in the Eastern Cape, in Ciskei, those of a Chawe clan got to the top. So you had people who didn't even have a matric, who became mayors, who became ministers of education and health. So there was a proximity system. It wasn't as blatant, but it was just as cruel and as ruthless. So for me, I read that as saying, we've always had this problem. Not an excuse of saying we didn't start it or it started there, we've continued. But I think you also have to acknowledge that there are some civil servants who've probably been around from the apartheid days and from the homeland days and people who were fairly used in just doing things in a particular way. And that has continued. So when I go to government and I see often officials not being at work, you know, the typical one where you hang your jacket on your chair and you disappear for the whole day. Now that practice I saw in the homeland days. The issue that when I need to have something done, I've got to go and buy you a barrel of Kentucky and a 2 liter Coke just to do what you need to do. That goes back to the homeland days. So I think it's not making an excuse, but an admission that some of our structural problems in how civil servants act and behave have been around for quite a long while. And I think it goes back to what I was saying, that that's the harder part to change because policies aren't going to change that. You're dealing with people who are in some cases fairly lazy and in some cases people who are willing to bend the system. But I never read it as an right. excuse.
Interesting. I think it is a, I think it's a different angle and I appreciate it. I'm not sure that it's absolutely comfortably with me, because I think that the point of the letter, and that's what I wrote in my article, is I believe it started off as a sharp one pager, but then as it got passed around in order to placate all the forces within the ANC, everybody added something until it was diluted Oros and you can't really remember what it tasted like. And
I won't deny that. I think there is a sense to placate those who are going to say you're fingering us, to try and broaden the blame, because repeatedly there's a sense of, you know, we're in the dark. We're not the only one, but we're number one to choose. So there is that kind of, we've done wrong, but we're not the only one, to try and spread the blame. There has been a deliberate attempt to kind of broaden
But when you've done something wrong, like right now, you know, it doesn't help. You know, if you've gone to ShopRite and you've shoplifted, it doesn't help to say, well, actually shoplifting has been around, from the beginning of time. It's actually completely irrelevant. You have gone into ShopRite and you have stolen. So don't tell me that we know it's been around. We know dishonesty and corruption has been around. It doesn't help us, or it doesn't, certainly I can't see why, telling us that, well, this is part of a system and a rite of passage, or the way thieves have always done it. It just doesn't, to me, what it's doing is it's saying, I'm not really taking responsibility. I am, because I know you need me to, and I'm trying to sort of release a little bit of that pressure that no doubt is exists in the system, but I'm just not quite, you know, I don't quite believe it the way perhaps I should.
How would I agree with you? Because I mean, it if you're remorseful, you speak about you contrite. This is what I've done. But the moment you kind of say yes, but I mean, I even remember with my from a personal context, if I would say it to my mother, yes, but there were other boys, mum would say, I really couldn't care about them. I'm dealing with you. And I think as a president of the ANC, he should first deal with the party. And to bring in other people doesn't necessarily strike as being very sincere. So I agree with you completely that focus on your wrongdoing and how you're going to deal with that. And if you want to be an example, then say, you know what, if we expect the public to follow us and other parties to follow us, then we must lead. We mustn't try and say, look, all of us are guilty. Say, look, we'll set the bar very high. And this is what we're going to do.
And Luba, unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. It is 8:53. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM.